This is BDO in the Boardroom, a podcast by the BDO Center for Corporate Governance for the Board of Directors and those charged with governance. We're joined by your board peers and inspiring leaders to discuss the trending and timeless issues that are impacting today's boardroom agendas. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to BDO in the Boardroom. I'm Amy Rojek, leader of BDO's Center for Corporate Governance, and I'm being joined once again today by my colleague, Holly Carr, BDO Managing Director within BDO's Forensics Group, to discuss how the board's active oversight of investigations undertaken in response to allegations of misconduct is critical in the eyes of regulators and increasingly factoring into penalties and sanctions imposed on wrongdoers. So prior to joining BDO in the past couple of years, Holly has had several roles, one as a manager in the Accounting, Policy, and SEC Reporting Group for Marriott, followed by 10 years at the SEC with her most recent position there as an assistant director in the Division of Enforcement, Office of Market Intelligence. As part of our forensic practice, Holly works with clients in a variety of capacities on whistleblowing and investigative matters, ESG disclosures and metrics, among other areas impacting the financial reporting and control environment. So Holly, thank you so much for joining me today.
Amy, thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to dive right in. So internal investigations can really be conducted by different roles within an organization, for example, internal audit, general counsel, management, et cetera. What circumstances would necessitate board oversight of an investigation?
Oftentimes, we think of when it comes to board oversight investigation, we're thinking about the audit committee and the responsibility they have oftentimes because they're interacting with the auditor. And at times, the auditor could raise up issues that would be non-compliance with laws and regulations that they are required to notify the audit committee about. And the audit committee then needs to have a response. Types of examples of this would be if the conduct involves maybe executives or other board members, oftentimes those that are not independent get questioned. We see sensitive topics, maybe including material non-public information. Maybe it's pre-IPO. Maybe they're having a merger acquisition matter that's coming up that's not public. There's allegations of individuals trading on that information. That's a super sensitive topic, and you would want the board to handle that or the audit committee specifically. And oftentimes, the other issue that comes up very commonly is that the company is expecting an inquiry or litigation. So they're expecting litigation from maybe a private party, class action, or a regulator's already kind of given them a warning that we're going to be looking further into certain conduct. And the board wants to get ahead of that and start to investigate the issue and find out what happened and the root cause.
Great. Thank you for that overview. And then perhaps you can explain the significance of the Securities Exchange Commission, as well as the Department of Justice's approach to imposing penalties and offering leniency that occurs.
Yeah, so the SEC and the DOJ, just keep in mind that their authorities are very different. The SEC is a civil authority and the DOJ is a criminal authority. And so the remedial actions that they can seek for companies are very different. But in some instances, they align. Oftentimes, we think of sanctions, fines, penalties, monitorships, things of that nature. And so these regulators have been extremely vocal as of late that their expectation, that there's always an expectation of cooperation, that companies have to respond timely, that provide records, they need to ensure the staff at the company are easily available to the investigative team. However, they differentiate the concept of substantial cooperation. And that is really the next level. And we have substantial cooperation that can be a factor into reducing penalties that the company might otherwise have imposed upon them due to the misconduct. So when we think about substantial cooperation, they're really looking for the ideas are, did the board self-report? So if you did an investigation early on, you see misconduct, you're still working through the details perhaps, but going to the regulator as an audit committee, or maybe you have a special committee at the board formed, you go before the regulator and say, we've identified this misconduct. We are actively investigating it. That is something that would go above and beyond. Other examples of this where they would consider it substantial cooperation by a board investigation is that if you are going to help point out the hot docs in investigation, these are the critical documents that really point to the misconduct, who was involved, why they engaged in misconduct, things of that nature. When you do an investigation, it is not uncommon to have millions and millions of records, emails, text messages, different types of reports and analyses that you're going through. It takes the regulator, when they do investigations, a long time to get through that information, to piece it together. And so if the board has identified through their investigative team these hot docs, the most critical documents, and they're willing to share that list with regulators to help have a more focused conversation about the conduct and help speed up this process, that's going to be considered, again, substantial cooperation. These are a couple of examples, but the regulators have really been very keen on seeing substantial cooperations from boards, and boards taking a super active role, not just in the investigation, but also in the remediation actions, making sure that remediation happens, it is complete, it is done timely, and that there have been actions to validate the remediation has occurred fully. So that's something too. So it goes beyond the investigation into remediation, but also be considered substantial cooperation by a board.
Seems like there's been a lot of notification and I guess communication of that in the news. And I think that's something that I know when we go and speak with audit committees, they're always interested in some of the enforcement trends, but more so how was the board involved in those type of things and type of investigations that happen subsequently. So I think this is really helpful what you just shared. How does the board's oversight of investigations influence the outcomes of regulatory scrutiny? So maybe a little more specificity in terms of what the board actually is doing.
Yeah. And so I think there's a couple of really good quotes from the SEC and DOJ where they were just very articulate this year about this. And so recently, the director of enforcement departed the SEC, Grubir Grewal, and he indicated this year, this is a direct quote from Mr. Grewal, it's where there's been real remediation that addresses the misconduct that may impact whether the SEC recommends undertakings, if we do, their scope. Effective remediation can further underscore a firm's commitment to compliance and help them build a case for cooperation credit. He kind of goes on to say that the bottom line here is that remediation has to be proactive and not undertaken solely because it's ordered as part of the enforcement action. It also has to be timely. The longer it takes to remediate, the more likely it is that the misconduct will recur. And it has to be meaningful enough that to both address the misconduct and to prevent it from happening again. So really this expectation, I think he's been very articulate. You have to remediate. You have to do it timely. You have to be actively involved in this. And that's really where they're going to really think about the cooperation credit. And the other one is that Department of Justice Deputy AG Lisa Monaco, she said, absent aggregating factors, the department will not seek a guilty plea when a company has voluntarily self-disclosed, cooperated, and remediated misconduct. Simply put, the math is easy. Voluntary self-disclosure can save a company hundreds of millions of dollars in fines, penalties, and cost. It can avoid reputational harms that arise from pleading guilty, and can reduce the risk of collateral consequences like suspension and debarment in relevant industries. So when you think about the board and their responsibility, Amy, you know, obviously you want the company to be best positioned to be successful in the long run and to recover from investigation by the DOJ or the SEC. And if this level of cooperation and engagement by the board saves you millions, avoids a guilty plea with the Department of Justice, allows the company to continue operating in highly regulated industries, those are all wins. And that's, I think, the critical part for the board to be thinking about and how they would be all the benefits that would come from their activity and investigation, leading it, making sure it's independent, and taking it all the way through remediation.
Right. And I'm thinking from the way you're analyzing this, it's not just millions of dollars in fines and penalties. It's truly capturing the broader scope of reputational damage, right? The loss of customers, the loss of credibility within the industry type of thing. So I appreciate those comments. So maybe what are some of the key elements that boards should include in their procedures to effectively identify and investigate misconduct within their organizations?
So what we'd like to see, and I think what's most beneficial for boards, is having existing protocols through which these critical types of allegations can get raised to the board level. You don't want allegations brewing at the staff level within the company, and there's no mechanism to get it elevated to the board so the board knows when they need to react. They know when they need to engage outside counsel. So you got to make sure you have those communication protocols of information getting to the board. Are you talking to your critical internal gatekeepers, the head of compliance, the head of internal audit? What are they seeing? Are you getting debriefed on the allegations going through your hotline at your company? Are any of those going to be more of a material nature and they need to be raised up to the board and an independent investigation is going to be needed? I think those are all some just really critical items, but also the board's aware of really unusual activity or special activity that companies engaged in, whether it's a merger and acquisition, whether it's going to be the regulatory inquiries, things of that nature. The board has insight. And so those types of activities oftentimes are a little bit riskier. It's a riskier time that misconduct could occur, and there's the window for that. So be thinking about, you know, what are the risks the company is engaging in right now? What are the additional activities that are maybe atypical to what a normal year looks like? And are there any additional considerations we need to have in place around those? Do we want to talk to additional internal gatekeepers? Do we want internal audit to be maybe performing additional procedures on a company that we just acquired? And maybe their controls aren't as strong, or they're engaged in misconduct. Those are things to be thinking about. But also the other idea is that the board should be prepared for these types of allegations to rise up to them and be able to react. And so in that kind of vein, think about, in this instance, who would do lead the investigation? Would it be a special committee that you would form of independent directors? Would the audit committee be responsible for overseeing this? Would you be using your general counsel in-house? Do you have external counsel that you would want to bring in? Who are these folks that you would need to talk to? And do you have regular access to them that you could quickly engage them to react to something that's raised up to the board? I think a couple other things that I think about, Amy, here is that you're going to need cooperation between, if you have a special committee or you have an audit committee, however you structure this, you're going to still need that coordination and communication between the full board and other committees in certain situations. So for example, you identify a bad actor that's an executive during your investigation. You don't want their compensation committee to be structuring a great bonus for this individual when you're aware of a fact pattern that would really indicate that maybe this person no longer needs to be with the company and they really should be thinking about a departure or exit package versus a bonus compensation package. So you're going to need some coordination, and it's really important that you have your general counsel or your external counsel help you navigate this, because you want to maintain privilege during investigation as well. So those are some things the board needs to be prepared for ahead of time.
Yeah, and I would say similarly along that line of vein, the last comment you were making is having those procedures and policies in place beforehand. I mean, we spent a lot of time this past two years looking at clawback policies, right, for financial reporting, restatements, mm-hmm. and other aspects of that. So that's kind of goes hand in hand, I believe. What steps should the board take once misconduct is identified to ensure that appropriate remedial actions are occurring timely?
I think that setting up an independent investigation is absolutely crucial. You need that independence to have credibility with your regulators. And so an independent investigation means you're not going to use general counsel. You wouldn't use internal audit. Those are folks that are internal for the company, and they're not truly independent in nature. You want to bring in outside experts that have the right knowledge about the topic, that can really work and coordinate together. If you have maybe a forensic accounting firm plus an external counsel, that they're going to work well together. And you need to work with your counsel on privilege, like I mentioned. You want to make sure that you're thinking about the work papers that are going to come out of this investigation and all the information that's going to be gathered. And you want that under privilege. The company can determine if and when and with whom they would want to share that information, and then kind of essentially lose privilege on certain pieces of information. You never know what you're going to uncover in one of these investigations. And it could be off topic, but something else that's material that pops up. And so you just need to be prepared for that. And the privilege helps you, gives you time to work with your counsel to navigate these unusual situations. You're going to need to figure out who's going to handle the daily oversight of this investigation, whether it's a subcommittee, you have maybe a special committee chairperson that can really deal with the logistics of interviewing firms, hiring them. There's billing, there's daily updates. There could be challenges with getting data. And the board or the special committee chair is going to have to weigh in with the company to help pave the way to get the information that is needed for the investigation. These are all some of the things that I'm thinking about. You need to have a communication plan. So once you've established that you have independent service providers, you understand who's going to lead the day-to-day, and you're starting to get into your investigation, you need a communication plan, because you're going to need regular updates. Understand what are they finding? What obstacles do they have in their way to conduct the investigation? Do we need to put an individual, an employee on garden leave because it's looking increasingly like they were involved and they're currently overseeing that same work stream within our company, and that's dangerous because the conduct's going to be ongoing. You also need to think about, when are you going to give regular updates to the general board? How is that going to look? How do you get general counsel involved with your external counsel? And then you're also going to have to be thinking about your communication plan with your regulators. At what point do you self-report? At what point do you provide them updates with what information, what hot docs, what preliminary observations you have and which regulators need to be involved. It may not be just the SEC and the DOJ. It's critical, have good advisors when you're in these types of situations. They are stressful. There's a lot at stake for the company. Oftentimes, there can be a lot at stake for the board. With civil litigation, we see litigation against board members, you know, saying that you've breached your fiduciary duty, but not detecting this conduct ahead of time by approving of it, condoning of it. So the board itself can be in a situation where they're involved in litigation and have personal liability that's being sought after them. So have good advisors, feel like you can trust them, feel that they're qualified. Make sure that you are actively listening to them and you feel like they're actively listening to you and that you have a good dialogue and rapport going with them that's going to allow you to get through this really challenging time. But at the end of the day, you got to get to the root cause of what caused this issue. Maybe you're very lucky and you do the investigation and you find everything is great and you can solidify that the company did everything accordingly appropriate and you can show the regulators why that is true and you had an independent group validate that. But I also think about, you know, if you don't, if there are issues and employees have to be terminated, new processes have to put into place, you need better controls, maybe you have to disclose something to your auditor, be thinking about what is the root cause? You know, is this really a compliance culture issue? Did we not have the right controls in place? Were we not allocating funds to high-risk areas to address, you know, some of the challenges they were having? You want to get down to that root cause because you don't want to be here a year again with a different type of investigation with the same root cause issue. You want to kind of nip it in the bud and make sure that you can address this once and for all. So those are some of the critical action items that I think the board or the special committee or the audit committee, depending on how you structure it, are going to have to be taking as part of investigation.
Thank you so much. I think this has all been really great practical advice. And I think I do want to highlight that all of this takes a lot of time and focus and resourcing. So I think the board, and if it's, you know, particularly within the audit committee's purview to oversee these, really has to build in that time to make sure that these things are all thought about throughout the year. And I take to heart all of the things that you're saying, Holly. So I would just want to say, first of all, thank you for joining me. And if our audience wants to hear more about when a fraud actually is alleged and what do you do now, please tune into our prior podcast where Holly, along with Patricia Gorham from Eversheds, did earlier this year for BDO in the Boardroom. So thanks again to Holly and to our audience. And please stay tuned for more from our podcast series. Holly, I'll give you the last word.
All right. Well, thank you, Amy, for having me. And I just want boards to know that their role is so critical and the regulators view them as critical. And it can really have such a beneficial outcome to speeding up an investigation and reducing any penalties. So critical role for board members here. And we're here to help if you need us.
Thank you for listening to BDO in the Boardroom. If you like the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you have any questions about what we discussed today, reach out to us via BDO.com, where you can also access the resources cited in this episode and learn more about the BDO Center for Corporate Governance. The views expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of BDO.